Downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
I am Velocity Child, and every Friday at the stroke of midnight, ride the broomstick with Fallen Woman. A weekly psychic fusion of forward thoughts, far-out ideas, magical foray, and spellbinding song. Stirring up the cauldron at Radio Free Brooklyn.
The aspect that lies in our unconscious, that in this story is known as Hades, is also called colloquially by many people whose lives are devoted to creative work, something like the editor or the director or the critic, and some have even more poetic names for it, the hungry one, the Pac-Man, the devourer. And there is great recognition among artists of this universal figure that douses the light. Even in the Little Abner cartoon strip, there is a fellow named Joe. His last name is spelled T-H-H-B-B-B, like Joe, who always has a little black cloud over his head. And the little black cloud goes wherever he goes, and wherever he goes, therefore, it is always dark and raining. And this darkening aspect is actually a normal part of the human personality. It is usually judgmental, and its pronouncements are often clearly audible to the ego. This darker judging aspect of the psyche can be helpful and useful when it poses such questions as, how will this work best? Or how does this fit with that? Or, I think you made a false start here, begin over again. Or, nah, wrong word, try another. It may work better this way. Even if it has a somewhat negative cast to it and says, you can't do that, you're not capable, you don't know what you're talking about. As long as the voice is very small, it is not greatly problematical. The problem comes, however, when a child who is brought up through the use of shunning or through techniques of ridicule or humiliation or shame or ostracism, where there is browbeating or berating of the child, and no matter what, the child can do no right and cannot please, then this internal darkness increases in destructive negativity, increases in power, increases in volume, so that what was once vague nattering about one's capabilities becomes an outright attack that disheartens and eventually garrots the creative process. Not in a cyclical way, but in a psychically criminal manner. When a child's psyche is written upon thusly and left to harden, something far darker, something that not only points out near misses or helps to correct false directions, something begins to take over that destroys all new potential ad infinitum. And this attack on creative psyche can also commence in adulthood, when one is surrounded by circumstances and people who denigrate the creative process itself, or one's abilities in the matter, or the end results of creative work. So, in either or any of these situations, the person in process of creating may hear, with their inner hearing, something that says things like, that isn't very good. Oh, see? Now, what does that mean? What makes you think this will work, you wiseacre? And other deleterious remarks. And this negative, what we call complex, is partly composed of memory of derogatory experiences in the outer world, as well as what we call an archetypal pattern, a negative archetypal pattern. In other words, something that is time out of mind, something that is universal to all humans, something that is interested in destroying, liquefying, desensitizing all things that have life. I call it the natural predator of the psyche, for from over 20 years of hearing dreams and doing clinical work and analyzing fairy tales and mythos, I find this dark figure constant in people's psyches. It cuts across all ethnic lines, across all gender, all economic and educational lines. It is the result of living in a culture that recognizes creativity only conditionally. It is the result of mimicking over and over the destructive things that we have been taught. But there's excellent news. And that is that although the fire of creativity has been banked in the individual, it has never gone out. No matter what, it is still there in the la chispa stage, in the stage of the ember that glows and needs or waits only for the breath upon it. This glowing ember that one need only blow upon, breathe some energy toward, and whoosh, it blazes up again. Because the creative function is the center of the soul and the psyche. It can never be destroyed. It can be distanced from, hidden away for a while, but it is there and whole nonetheless. And so this is the part that Hades plays in a psyche that has been hurt. In other words, there's Hades in all of us, a natural predator that would steal the best of whatever we have to offer, at least momentarily, certainly not forever. But also, it can become outsized. In Greek mythology also, there's an old myth about Procrustes' bed, and that is a torturous bed in classical antiquity, that when a person lays down upon it, and if that person were too small for the bed would stretch the person painfully until they fit. And if the person was too big for the bed, any parts hanging over the edge would be cut off. And this is the profound symbol of trying to fit the person to the form rather than finding the form that is best for the person to thrive in. And this is the issue of Hades, because a very big struggle continues in the creative person and process as a result of the Hades element being overgrown. The struggle to right this situation has great honor to it, and there are two sorts of struggle. One is about struggle to no longer destroy ourselves through denigration, nor through neglect of the time it takes to develop our craft, not the effort it takes to continue with it day in and day out, and certainly not by isolating ourselves from the bounty that's within us to create with. The other struggle is with the learning of the true cycles, the integral cycles of creativity, which, from time to time, a slowing takes over, a quiescence, a time for everything to die down, sometimes so far that you wonder in fear that there's any life left there at all, in the natural cycle that is not interrupted by complexes, by negative and destructive complexes. There is no fear about creativity dropping out of the bottom. It will come back. It will follow the trajectory of the cycle. And there clearly belongs to the creative center of the self a cycle of descent and return. That ascendancy, those death throes, and that incubation. And in the incubation, although it feels death-like in one sense, is a time when the fire is gathering itself in order to burst forth again. Just like a wave that rises on itself, hesitates, and then falls back into itself, the creative cycle builds, delivers, and recedes. Sometimes the incubation period, for various reasons, such as dawdling on our part, such as fear to commit, the idea, the mood, the truth, the thing, to paper, to canvas, to the dance floor, all these things that we can do to ourselves to put off the restoration of our creative nature, these truly can interfere and are often funded by complexes. But one way of breaking through the complex certainly is, as is done in this story, through laughter, because it loosens the depressive feelings that nothing is as it should be. In a natural cycle of creativity, all is as it should be. Nothing is out of place. As we know, when things are flat or painful, the soul is very near in all the worst situations. As in, the most intensely creative, the soul is pulling you down into its lap, and it has words for you, instruction and balm, and it is sometimes our inability to recognize the soul in all its guises that keeps us from sensing this immense benefactor is so very near. But it is there, and I guarantee it. The cycle of loss and restoration is also given meaning through following your night dreams. These can help you to rout complexes, negative destructive complexes, out of the psyche, because the dream ego, meaning the part of us that both participates in dreams and holds them in memory for us to retrieve, will give us pictures of what the matter is within the psyche, may even give us clear pictures of what has happened to Persephone and what kind of Hades has come and abducted her and raped her and stolen her away. In terms of these negative complexes, the personal component of this natural predator that has grown out of its proper size and place is made up of messages or material from one's experiences with one's mother, father, teachers, brother, sisters, in other words, from one's culture, one's personal culture. If these are denigrating and devaluing experiences, say, for instance, you can't draw a straight line, so of course you can't do art. Or you don't know which end of the camera is up, so you can't do photography. Well, you've never published anything. How can you call yourself a writer? Or your stories are really simple. Nobody would want to read those. They're shallow. You think that's great literature? You can't read music, so you can't write a song. One time, years ago, I wrote a poem called How to Silence a Woman, and I wrote down all the ways that I could see in the culture surrounding me how people who had something to say were silenced. And this was a time during which over 85% of the books were written by men, and over 90% of the awards in literature were given to men. And the poem went on for 20 pages, How to Silence a Person. So even though I wrote the poem originally about women, I believe that it's as true about men. And here's a segment of it. Ways to silence a woman. Say, we're saying the same thing, don't you see? Say, don't question. Just have faith. Say, don't defy my authority. If you want to pass, do it the way I tell you. Say, your ideas are seductive. Say, your ideas are dangerous. Say, it's too disgusting. It's not done. It's too immature, not well thought out. Say, you're overreacting. Say, you're being too emotional. Say, you're not making any sense. Say, I can't understand you when you're upset. Say, I can't listen when you're so angry. Say, you've missed the point. Say, well, really, we're talking about something else. Say, that's a wild idea, and then talk about your own work. Say, that's not practical. Say, that's grandiose. Say, no one will do it, believe it, or follow you. Say, no one will want it. Say, no one wants to listen to that. Say, it's a closed system. You can't change it. Say, they'll ignore you. They'll forget it. It's already been done. It's not time. It's not the right year. Who do you think you are? No one can predict the future. Say, I didn't have it any better than you, so stop whining. Say, I put up with it, so you'll have to too. Say, I've suffered for a long time and can't stand to hear you. Say, you're not ready. Say, I'll help you, but then don't. Say, I'll invite you, but then don't. Say, I'll pave the way, but then destroy her message. Say, I'll open the door, and then shut it in her face. Say, I'll help you if you write it the way I want you to. Say, we'll include you, then forget to. Say, we'll talk about it, but but never talk about it. When you are confronted, make excuses. Say you are tired. You are busy. You are overwhelmed. To give her voice, just two words. Tell me. The silencing of the creative life can come from outside yourself, certainly. In academia, in relationships, in family, and elsewhere. Silencing occurs when everyone is in a relationship of powerlessness to unshared power. And it can also happen inside a person so that there is something in power in the psyche that will not share its power. And there is also something being held hostage, the creative function, that because you are not behind it 100% is powerless to confront that internal predator. And this is Hades stealing Persephone, the malicious censor, the careless editor, the false coach, the undercutting mentor, the punitive guide. These are representations of the innate predator that most people are well aware of hearing in their minds. And depending on the person's background, these can be exceptionally cruel and debilitating, and that compromises the theft of Persephone. There really is no other thing that causes creativity to go awry other than that the killing force within the psyche, this cold force within the psyche that tells you that you are not adequate and that what you produce is not adequate and that in fact it's even pathetic. And of course, none of that is true, but there is a part of the psyche that is Persephone-like, that is forever innocent and sensitive, that believes these demeaning things very easily. And that Persephone bleeds, much blood loss, when it hears those sorts of things, and it loses energy, and as a result sinks into the unconscious. And there, as the Persephone in the myth, sits upon the icy throne, drained of life and deadened. So while we do not want to resist letting Persephone go about a normal and natural descent, we do not want her to be abducted, seized, held hostage in the midst of our creative process when it's not her time to incubate in the underworld. So in the far older story, the pre-Hellenic story about Persephone and Demeter, one day Persephone is out playing and she hears voices crying off in the distance. And that evening she says to her mother, Demeter, when I was out, I heard people, many people, and it sounded as though they were weeping, but I could not discover where their sound was coming from. And Demeter said, don't pay any attention to it, and went on with the meal. The next day, Persephone again was out playing, and again she thought she heard the sound of weeping. And there was a little cleft in the earth, and as she parted it with her fingers, she looked down into the earth, and deep down in the earth was a group of people who were weeping, and they were the souls of the dead who had lost their way in the underworld. And Persephone was filled with profound compassion. And she entered into the earth, and down she went. And the earth closed over her. And in the evening, when her mother sought her, she did not answer. And so began the great round of descent into the underworld, during which time Demeter, not knowing what had happened to her daughter, and her daughter wishing and willing to make the descent out of compassion, to help the souls of the dead find their way into the light again, Demeter and Persephone were separated from one another. So you see, one way or another, Persephone will make her descent, stolen away, or being moved to lead the souls of the dead through the complete incubation, she will go away for a time. In the pre-Hellenic story, Demeter searches for her daughter and does go to Helios, who says to her, "Your daughter is in the underworld, doing her work. Be ready to receive her when she returns." And Demeter, because she is depressed, not having her dear daughter close to her, sits through an entire season and does not make things grow. In the meantime, Persephone is under the earth, and as she descends down through the earth, her clothing is torn away from her, and by the time she comes to the great world tree that is at the center of the underworld, she is caught and snagged and hangs upside down on the tree and dies. She stays dead for 3 days and three nights. And by the ministrations of a beloved king who lives in the underworld and an old crone, she is restored again to life. And as she understands that cycle then of life and death and life again, she is able to lead the souls of the dead out of the gloaming and back into the light again. As the souls come back into life, Persephone also emerges from the earth, and her mother and Hecate the crone are waiting for her with a great white gown that they clothe her in then, and she is returned no longer as a naive, innocent young woman, but as a knowing young woman who is attracted toward the good and the deep and the compassionate in a way that she never could have realized before her descent. So it's not possible for us to avoid the descent because it's life. Proper life moves like a great water wheel slowly and in great turns in a great cycle, and it lifts water up from the bottom and brings it to the top and then even spilling some of it back, and then scoops up again from the bottom and brings to the top and then flows back down to the bottom again. And it's this action of bending and bringing and bending and bringing up that makes us brim and then empty of creative life. So we want not to resist letting Persephone be gone from us, as she is our only hope because she brings new life. That cannot be prevented, nor do we wish to. But once she is gone, we want to be able to make the opening in the earth and the preparations for her restoration. We want to have a wise and elder part of ourselves in the psyche who is crone-like, who can help her to become restored. We want to have a king in the underworld who knows the ways of the underworld and will love the side of us that does not have complete life from time to time, that will love us regardless. So to know the way is to call Persephone back, to receive her, to be ready for her burst of energy when she arrives. That is why we cleanse ourselves of the negative complexes, because they interfere with this very sacred practice of cycles. In order to do that, we have to sweep the psyche clean of complexes that are destructive. A complex, classically defined, is a feeling-toned set of emotions that have a certain autonomy all of their own. They have their own value systems, not necessarily in agreement with the ones that you hold so dear. And complexes have their own ideas and opinions, and they live within the unconscious. A negative complex is the troublemaker at the bottom of the psyche when, for instance, a person who is going through the receiving line at a wedding tells the bride and groom how nice it is at last to be at their funeral. In classical Jungian psychology, there is the use of the phrase negative mother complex and negative father complex, for instance. These should not be understood as simply personal mother and personal father, but as a disruption of the psyche coming from motherly and fatherly sources. In other words, from sources outside oneself that govern nurturing, organization, and manifestation. There are also many other names for complexes, as there are for many of the sources of disturbance in the psyche, but the negative mother complex, erupts in the creative process most often by saying tiresome and repetitive things such as, you can't do it, you can't do it at all, you are incapable. And the negative father complex most often manifests and attacks from a different direction, saying that the product is no good. In other words, perhaps you might be capable, you know, if you worked at it for 40 or 50 years, but essentially, you're no good at it. You're really no good at this, so why don't you just give it up? So, as you understand the concept of complexes, you gain a better idea of exactly what is stealing your creative life from you. And those complexes that reside in the unconscious are actually our Hades, in the sense of abduction, rape, and theft. They are the things that steal from us, not just for a timely descent, but for much of the time and too much of the time, with the intent of keeping us from the center of our life, away, cut away utterly from El Duende, cut away from the things that are most important for us to feel that we are thriving. So what is truly critical is that we realize the difference between our creativity being maliciously burgled away from us and it sinking temporarily out of sight simply because it is time. Some of the great creation myths characterize Hades as being a rapist and someone who would be violent with the maiden creativity, with the sensitive side of our natures. So we begin to form an idea that the malevolent critic in the psyche is something that has will and intention, and that the intention is to keep the creativity and all its beauty, interestingly enough, all for itself. This is a phenomena that shows up in many folk tales and myths, such as Bluebeard and Mr. Fox and the Animal Groom and so on. And in addition, it is personified in another myth about the son of a goddess who is turned into a swamp creature named Caliban. Now, Caliban was terribly, terribly devastated because he had to live down in the darkest swamps, and he had a long reptilian tail and curved over toenails and claws at the end of his fingers and scales on his skin that were so sharp that they cut anyone and anything who came near him. And he was tragically in love with a beautiful woman who lived in the topside world, who wouldn't look at him, who wouldn't respond to him in any way. And so, every night, he sent one of his minions to fly through the air to the sleeping place of this woman. And this horrible winged creature would steal her spirit out of her sleeping body and put her spirit in a gilded cage and fly with the cage back down into the swamp. And the spirit of the woman sat sadly upon the throne next to Caliban, who attempted all night long to cajole her with treats and to converse with her. And all night long she refused any food and Caliban's words. And Caliban would wheedle, come live with me and be my bride, and I'll make you my queen. And he was relentless. And all night long the woman's spirit resisted and resisted, saying, no, I cannot do this. No, I do not want to. No, I do not love you. But Caliban really, truly craved to have her beauty for himself because he was so terribly ugly without cease and so lonely and so without. And so Caliban and Hades echo a destructive part of our own personalities, a part that steals us away out of loneliness. This aspect of psyche is something that is lonely for beauty, something that is somehow left out of our life, something that perhaps we revile or that we don't like or even that we hate, something that we may have no pity for. And sometimes, if we've had a really difficult relationship with the people who raised us with regard to creativity, sometimes that complex inside of us is made or composed of those remnants of that difficult relationship we had early on. But it is not our parents now, per se, that destroy us. It's a part of ourself that mimics the earlier destruction, that deserves perhaps some kindness or some particularity or participation in our creative life, but it has been excluded and has, you might say, become a monster. So though we might tie it up with a rotten parent or a nasty teacher, we have to be able to take a look at this part of ourself and say, can this ugliness be transformed? Can this thing that would like to prey upon my life be made into something different? Can I find a way for this particularly gruesome aspect of the psyche to participate in my creative life instead of stealing it or destroying it? And you're probably saying, well, how does one go about that? And I wish I could tell you that it's a 5-minute process, but it isn't. It's a long process. And sometimes it takes years to affect it, but you can, in very short order, make the negative mother and negative father complex so that they do not interfere with your creative life. One of the most instructive and beautiful images out of Spain is that of flamenco. Flamenco was developed during a time when Spain was overrun by the Moors. And people developed the music, the dance, and the attitude that goes with flamenco, which is an attitude of refusing to be vanquished. Even though their wrists were in chains and they were not allowed enough food and they weren't sheltered and they were pushed from one place to another, they developed a kind of music that came out of being not clean, that came out of not being pristine, that came out of not being free. And as a result, the soul was made free. The soul burst free in not only the people who danced the dance and who made the music, but in the people who were the listeners and the people who were the watchers of it. There's an old poem, Singing Over the Bones. If you are too clean, the beloved cannot find the way in. The visitor cannot find the way in. So, you might say that even though there has been destruction in the psyche, that it is a door, that destruction blows open a wall in the psyche through which you can enter down into the wound and apply the medicines that are required to heal that wound. I will not lie to you and tell you it can be done overnight. But by following your night dreams, by following the creative urge that pours paintings and sculpture and words and songs out of you, you can discover the medicines that are needed to repair the aspects of psyche so that instead of being seized and thrown into the underworld, you can learn to ride the natural cycle and to continue in your life as a person of courage and a person of knowledge. El Duende is at the center of the psyche. It is pristine. It is pure. It is the unwounded double. So no matter what has occurred in your life, and be it destruction by teachers, by culture, by isolation, there is something in the psyche that is complete and whole and yours and is looking for you.
You're going to love this. Just love it.
Thank you. earthly way of knowing.
He's singing.
Which direction we are going. There's no knowing where we're rowing. Or which way the river's flowing. Is it raining? Is it snowing? Is a hurricane a-blowing?
Not a speck of light is showing, so the danger must be growing. Are the fires of hell a-glowing? Is the grisly reaper mowing? Yes! The danger must be growing, for the rowers keep on rowing, and they're certainly not showing any signs that they are slowing!
Jim, Jim, Chiroo, I does what I likes, and I likes what I do.
Hello, art lovers.
Today I'm a screever, and as you can see, a screever's an artist of highest degree. And it's all me own work from me own memory. Jiminy, Jim, Jiminy, Jim, Jim, Chiroo. I draws what I likes, and I likes what I drew. No remuneration,
do I ask of you? Bubby Cap would be glad of a copper or two. Me Cap would be glad of a copper or two. Jim, Jiminy, Jim, Jiminy, Jim, Jim, Jeroo. La-dum, da-da-dum, da-da-da-da-dum.
Upon a star. like a boat out of the blue. Fate steps in and sees you through. One you wish upon a star, your dreams come
trouble. Do you suppose there is such a place, Toto? There must be. It's not a place you can get to by a boat or a train. It's far, far away. Behind the moon, beyond the rain.
Garden with me. I'd like to be under little hideaway beneath the waves, resting our head on the seabed in an octopus's garden near a cave. We would sing and dance around because we know we can't be found.
I'd like to be under the sea in an octopus's garden in the shade.
About the coral that lies beneath the waves. Oh, what joy for every girl and boy, knowing they're happy and they're safe. We would be so happy, you and me. No one there to tell us what to do.
I'd like to be in an octopus's garden with you. In an octopus's garden with you. In an octopus's garden with you.
You.
Curiosity Child, and every Friday at the stroke of midnight, Ride the Broomstick with Fallen Woman, a weekly psychic fusion of forward thoughts, far-out ideas, magical foray, and spellbinding song, stirring up the cauldron at Radio Free Brooklyn.